You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
And let's talk about what lesbians have found.
Let's hang out.
And let's listen to two lesbians shout.
Let's hang out.
Let's hang out.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Les Hang Out, the podcast where pack up your baggage, everyone. We are gonna process some trauma. It's therapy time.
I'm still gonna keep your intro, and I'm just
from the West Coast. I'm Lee Holmes Foster,
and from the East Coast, I'm Ellie Brigida. To those of you who have been with us through this whole journey, thank you as always for listening. If you're a new listener, welcome. We're excited to have you here. Here's what's happening this week.
This week in the Les Dom.
This week in the Les Dom is a place where we can touch base each episode about things going on with the podcast or otherwise. We want to let you all know about our Trova trip. We have 13 spots filled and we have 5 left. You can sign up at bit.ly/lesdocroatia, September 21st through September 27th. And the last day you can sign up for that is July 23rd.
We also want to remind you, in season 6, we are releasing new bonus episodes every month for our supporters on Patreon. If you want to catch all of those, I think we have 9 that have come out so far. Our latest one was on Loving Annabelle. We had so many thoughts about that movie.
So many.
You can find all of that and more at our Patreon at bit.ly/lespatreon.
Also, our next Patreon episode is going to be on Ammonite, so that's going to be something else. Scary for that.
Something else. In the greater Les universe, I guess this is just in the greater universe in general, but it feels relevant to
us. I just feel like there's a lot of queer people who are involved in it.
I mean, okay, so the news is the Writers Guild Association has gone on strike. I'm sure many of you have seen. Obviously, this is relevant both because we are people who love media in a general sense. I mean, especially queer media, sure, but none of our shows exist without writers.
Mm-hmm.
And also because we just happen to know many, many queer people who are
writers,
both writers and out on the picket lines right now. So there are lots of ways you should look up the WGA West and WGA East for how you can help support people who are striking or help support people who are out on the picket lines. But we just want to say, obviously, we are very pro-union here at Les Hangout, and we are very pro-paying writers. So
yes, that's
our message.
We are
on
with
that.
You on the picket lines from wherever we can be. Yes. Also, we want to talk about a message from her, which, if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, we've had actually multiple guests who have worked at her, the dating app. We even had Robin on, who is the founder of her. And one of the reasons that we love her was just completely reiterated when her said, "Here's a message for transphobes. If you don't like it, delete it." Basically saying that, like, the app her is very supportive of the trans community. And if you're a transphobe, they don't want you. They don't want your support, and they do not want you on the app. So
great, 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 great.
They really, I mean, they've always said, they've always said it in ways, but I appreciate that they really lay down the law.
Yep. It's good. How do we mass blast out our listeners to say the same
thing? Yeah, same thing to the listeners.
TERFs, not necessary to hang
Get
around.
Out.
Thanks, though.
Yes, but okay. Thanks. Yeah.
In other news, Hayley Kiyoko was just making news because she did a show down in Tennessee. And the story is, I guess, she said she was approached by like an undercover cop who warned her against bringing drag queens up on stage because her show was all ages. They were like, oh, that's going to be against the law and all this stuff. Didn't let that stop her. So listen, Hayley Kiyoko joining the lineup with like Lizzo of people who are saying, you know what? Fuck you, Tennessee. We're just going to keep bringing drag queens out at our shows regardless. And so, yeah, so that happened.
We're here for it.
Good for you, Hayley Kiyoko. Good for you, drag queens. Boo on you, Tennessee.
True. With that, that's what's happening this week. Back to you, Ellie and Lee.
Thanks, Ellie and Lee. We are so excited to bring you episode 19 of season 6, Hot Loss Puns. And we are joined by a very special guest today. We have Liz Glazer, who's a winner of Boston Comedy Festival and Ladies of Laughter Competition, a former tenured law professor, and just recently on the 1-year anniversary of her daughter's stillbirth, she recorded her debut album, A Very Particular Experience. And that's going to be out on May 12th. So coming out so soon, your first album. Hi, Liz. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi. Hello, Lee. Hello, Ellie. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, it comes out May 12th. If today's May 8th, it's possible for you, the listener, to pre-order it, which I didn't know this. And I feel like everything in show business, you just learn it because you're suddenly in it.
Thrown into it.
Yeah. But so I didn't realize this, but the way that iTunes calculates rankings upon release of an album is based on the pre-orders of that album. And so it could be, if you're number one on iTunes, right? I didn't know that either. If you're number one on iTunes, it could be because like 21 people pre-ordered your album and then it comes out on May 12th. And so if, as you listen to this episode, you like me and you want to help that ranking upon release, I would certainly appreciate it because, you know, it's a cool screenshot if you can get it. That's like the record company. Yeah. So anyway, so that's, you know, beside the point in a way, because as I learn more about like show businessy things, I'm just like, right. But that's like not like none of it's the point. And also it's still cool.
Yes.
You know?
Well, okay. What is the point?
Yes.
Then?
I'm
I'm a showbiz girl. Okay. So I'm curious. What's the point?
It's a great question, Ellie. I think the point for me, and I feel like I could take as long as this episode goes to answer this question.
All right, here we go.
Which
I can
sense that that's how the question was designed in a good way.
Yeah.
Those are the best questions. But so I started, as you mentioned, Lee, I used to be a tenured law professor and then I quit. I left it entirely. So I say tenured, not because my mother wants me to, so that I'm bragging, even though that's also a little bit true. And also it's like, my mother probably be like, I didn't say that. And it's like, actually, you're right, mommy. I've internalized it so much
that
I think I have to say it. Is
you're like, no, you might not have, but the you that lives in my brain sure did all the time.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you don't know you?
Yeah.
You said that. Which you? But anyway, the reason that I say it is actually not so much because of the brag, but rather because of the why for me for stand-up, because I had the literal most secure job that anyone could have. I had just gotten tenure, which from a psychological and existential perspective for me at that time, which was 10 years ago, or I got tenure like 11 years ago, and then I did stand-up shortly thereafter. And so the reason that I think that that's like significant in my life is because I had what I was like going for at the time, right? And by that, I mean, you know, I went to law school. I was like, okay, gotta achieve whatever. My whole like 20s, I'm 43 now. And so, you know, my 20s, my 30s were like very much animated by that specific kind of drive, meaning like, I gotta succeed at work, right? I gotta, you know, so I'm just thinking like, what were the currencies for me as a law professor? Oh, I gotta make sure my article is in a top law review. Oh, I have a visit at a school that's like higher in US news. Oh, I gotta get tenure, all that stuff. And to the extent that anything in show business mimics that, I feel like I'm allergic to it, okay? And so it's not like, I'm a stand-up comedian and I've won some stuff, but that took a while for me because I feel like for the longest time, and I still a little bit like have this, is like, it's not that I'm trying not to succeed, but I'm almost like really trying to uncover some deep truths and like honestly find enlightenment and like get to some layer of the onion that is me that's like completely stripped of any, I don't know, like boundaries, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think honestly, I mean, that's like how I got sober. I've been sober for a while. You know, I quit everything. The thing I'm now working with is sugar. That's like the
that's the final kind of last frontier thing for you.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like it. It does seem like it. But I say it because it's like the reason for me has been like I want to mainline my personality, I guess, and just like have that be like I can be the most me in any situation. And it's like hard when, you know, the stages get bigger and yeah, you're taping something or it's a contest or, you know, however the stakes are high on a specific occasion can feel big, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I still enjoy it. And I so remember, like, for me, it was honestly a little bit less being a professor, a little bit more some moments when I was like a first year associate, which I had good experiences in law, but like I remember like first year associate being up at 4 a.m. writing a summary of a lease. And you think a lease maybe is like a 2-page thing. These leases are office space leases for hundreds of thousands of square feet. They're phone books. And I'm up at 4 a.m., you know, trying to summarize this thing that I definitely don't understand, you know, and the stakes are really high. And I remember feeling like, you know, bad in that moment. And now I have certain pressures like the ones that I was mentioning in, you know, show business that, you know, they're big, but they don't make me feel a kind of way that I did before, at least some of the time.
It's right? Like you want to succeed, but just a little bit, right? Like not too much.
Well, I think like as an overachiever, I think it's just like taking the pressure off yourself to hit a certain threshold is what you're sort of saying of like, if it happens, cool, but it's not the be all end all of my happiness.
I think that's right. And I also think that like, you know, whenever there's like people talk about imposter syndrome, right? And the kind
of
implied, the implication is that you're like, you have imposter syndrome and it's not real, right? Mm. Like you're somehow making it up in your head. I look back on myself as a lawyer and as a law professor where I really had imposter syndrome. And I was like, yeah, I was right. The only thing that I am verified as is as an imposter. I'm the only, like, I'm really a fraud, right? And that's how I felt. Not because, I mean, first of all, my competency, like I taught a class that I got a C in as a law student. That's true. And now I do a lot of shows for law schools and law students and law firms. But like I say that, you know, because I think that there's a real catharsis on the part of certainly me. And it seems like the audiences in those shows, because there's such a pressure, I guess, a variety of different worlds, but to assert competency and expertise where you might not exactly have it. Now, I won awards for teaching the class that I got a C in as a law student. And I don't think that's an accident because I think I had to study and learn it to such a degree that I do believe that I deserve those awards in the end. You know, it's similar for me. It was like I failed, I think it was 3 driving tests because of parallel parking. Can I tell you, I am an astoundingly good parallel parker. Okay.
You have to be.
I don't mean
point.
To brag. Exactly. And I think that like I really love like that kind of story of like, yeah, I failed so many times. And that's exactly the reason. It's precisely the root of my competency in that area. Now, in terms of stand-up, you know, yeah, like comedy is about like nailing punchlines and writing and all that stuff. And I'm into that, but I think if I had led with it, if I knew then when I first started stand up, how much of it was that craft and almost like the mathematics of joke writing and telling, I don't know that I would have done it because it mimics so parallel everything I left, right? And I think I had to come around to it. So my first years in comedy, first of all, I never repeated anything. I didn't know you were allowed. I've heard that I'm not the first person who had that story to stand up, but I didn't mean to do it. I did it. And like I did it because somebody was like, hey, did you ever think of being a stand-up comedian? I was like, no, but I had a crush on her. And she's like, I'll put you on my show. And I was like, are you going to be at your show? And I did it because of that. Okay. And the first time I ever did stand-up comedy, I told this to my therapist. Okay. I said to my therapist, I was like, I feel like I had a professional orgasm. Okay. That was what I said to my therapist. And if you don't understand a professional orgasm, it's basically a regular orgasm, but I was 100% sure that I was having it. Okay. And so that was the thing that I did that like fueled me to leave. But it wasn't like, hey, I'm, you know, good. I mean, I guess I felt a certain level of like connecting with the audience the first time or else there would have been nothing to go on. But like, it wasn't so much like, I think I'm amazing and I want to be the best at this because yeah. I was so driven by that type of overachieving goal setting in like an earlier iteration of myself. And I came to all of this after I got it. I got the thing that I was supposed to never get. When I was interviewing to be a law professor, even the professors of mine who recommended me were like, you're never going to get this job. And they weren't off base, right? But I love that I have that in my background because everybody says the same thing in Hollywood in one way or another. And so it's like nice to at least have hard evidence of like, well, no, everybody said I wouldn't get that either. So like, maybe I might be okay. You know, like, I don't know. So anyway, I think the short answer to your question is enlightenment. That is why I'm in it.
And end of episode. That's,
yeah.
It's enlightenment.
That was good. I liked it.
That's it. Well, I'm curious. I mean, that's your why for why did you get into comedy, which I love. You just did your debut album. Like this is, you said you've been doing comedy for 10 years mm-hmm. and it's the first time you've done an album. Mm-hmm. So what was like the catalyst for this first album?
Yeah, well, so the story is more than just about the stillbirth. So one answer is I recorded this album on the 1 year anniversary of when my wife gave birth to our first daughter, Leo Pearl, who was stillborn. And that I wanted to record an album about that and about grief and to tell truths that had punchlines and to basically have people come together to commemorate the day, which our friends and family might have anyway. And certainly Karen, my wife, and I would have acknowledged the existence of that day and the existence of our daughter in some way. And I was like, okay, well, why not trust myself to handle this topic with the kind of delicateness that it deserves? Because I do trust myself in that way. And so that's what I did. Yeah. And I wanted to, like, it was kind of like, I say this on the album itself, but also like the day was going to come no matter what. And I wanted to acknowledge it with something creative and positive, because it was going to happen no matter what. And so, yeah. You know, I hope that people enjoy it, one, that they can learn something about the persistence of stillbirth and how rampant it is. And also, you know, that like talking through grief is a way that people can acknowledge is an available, I don't know, use for performance and writing,
yeah,
you know, and stand-up comedy. But the other thing that I was going to say is that it is a longer story than that, because I was going to record an album called Born Sorry when my wife was pregnant with Leo, our daughter. And then like one thing very quickly led to another with her preeclampsia diagnosis that then resulted in the stillbirth. And so that recording was postponed for Born Sorry, which would have been the first album. About 3 weeks after the stillbirth, I was like, you know, I think I have some things to say about this. I canceled all of my shows through the end of 2021, which was when this all happened, except for one where my best friend was having a show and he's like, listen, you can do a set. You don't have to, whatever. And I was like, I'm going to do it. I filmed it. And it was like me in like the rawest state you could imagine doing the jokes that I wrote in the hospital in a file entitled Way Too Soon, because they were just coming, right? Like this is how writers and comedians process stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't mean to have those thoughts. And, you know, I was just like, God, now I'm having like three of them. I should write them down, you know? So I did a set that was that and I filmed it. And then I also realized that I had a lot of the jokes about Karen's pregnancy and my feelings about Karen's pregnancy at the time already on tape. And I was like, I'm never going to do those jokes again. And I'm not going to do the album Born Sorry. But I wonder if there's an opportunity for me to cut together a documentary about the making of this album, A Very Particular Experience, which we also have on video in addition to the audio album, which will come out first. And so my friend Greg, who's an editor, and I have been working on a documentary entitled, if you like puns, Still Born Sorry, which is the making of like this hour after the cancellation of the prior planned hour.
I do love a good pun, but God.
I know. I mean, it's the pun that's like so perfect.
It's right there.
That I never,
it's right,
right
there.
I didn't. And Born Sorry is a punchline of a joke of mine that I mean, actually, that one I sometimes do, which is basically the like it's after a whole kind of monologue-y, ranty thing like I do. But then it's like, I don't know if I was born a lesbian, but I was for sure born sorry. And that's like the joke after an act out where I'm apologizing a lot.
Yeah.
Totally. Well,
but you know what I love though is having listened to, because just to talk about like the, you know, you were talking about having doing something for the day, right? Like the day was going to happen regardless. And what I love about the special is that like you talk a lot at the top about like, you know, you have like, yeah, your whole like your family and your friends and your medical teams and your like everyone's there. And like that I love, like, I love that aspect of, I imagine it was even more so for people who were at the show, but are not like in your close circle, you know, that it felt like an invitation to be experiencing that day with all of you, you know, and like, and that's a really neat thing, because I think, you know, one of the things we wanted to talk about, obviously, just in the context of like grief as a general topic, right? Is like grief is tricky because it's not always an easy thing to know where someone's gonna be with it and how allowed you are to share that with them.
Yeah.
And you know, like where that level is. And so this, it's like it actually makes it very accessible.
Oh,
right?
Thanks.
In a way that I think is actually really important, especially for topics like this, because like grief in a general sense, but I think especially things with like stillbirth is a very hard thing for people to know.
Yeah. I mean, it's
how
a literal
do you approach, you know, like where are where is everyone gonna be at and what do you say and where do you land? And like this, yeah, I felt like it made it very, it was like a nice door opening into like having the conversation and in getting to have it in a way that wasn't going to be too much for people to feel like it was like too much to know how to handle that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I appreciate that very much, Lee. And that was certainly the design of it. And, you know, what I spent the most time thinking through, other than like, okay, I want to do this story, this joke, like, you know, that obviously, but I really was like, what do I want to say?
Yeah.
You know, and I think this goes back to Ellie, your question and that conversation from the beginning of this conversation about the why, because I'm like, okay, like, yeah, if I want to put together, like, what do I want to win the Olympics of like saddest but funniest comedy album? Like, I don't know.
You've got a good shot. I'll tell you, you're a contender.
You're a contender.
But I mean, like that, you know, I didn't want to go in with that because I was like, okay, I want to acknowledge the day, but I also want to think very deeply to the extent I can about how this experience affected me. I think that the insight that I meant for the album to really come through with was, can I decouple love and a fear of death? Because for me, those have been inextricably linked from literally before I can remember. And there's, you know, talk on the album about my inherited trauma. All four of my grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And so I do think that that like is folded into my experience of the world. I talk about, you know, how often my family and I are on the phone and saying, I love you and stuff like that. And I think that like really the most resonant insight that I had from holding Leo was, this is the only person I've ever known who I love, and I'm not worried about their death because when I met her, she was already dead.
Yeah. And can I tell you, man, that part of the special, like as a person who also has a lot of anxiety and two kids, I was like, oh no. I'm like, this is hitting some uncomfortable places because it's so true. It's like we have friends who just had their first kid as well. And like the wife has also a lot of anxiety, and he's their son is still very young. And I remember like when he was born, and she had a really rough time with just the anxiety, like just the like, how can I go to sleep? What if he stops breathing? And we're like, you just got to go to sleep. And she was like, well, how do you ever stop worrying about that? And I was like, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't. I'm like, I have been terrified every day for years. Like, it doesn't ever stop. And there was something about like that moment where you were like, oh, yeah, that didn't exist in that context. That's like, it's so real. And also, I was like, oh, is that what it takes to stop worrying about that? Is that...
Well... And I don't know the answer to that, because it's not like just having that experience causes the worry of death to disappear.
No, absolutely not. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure like I mean, because I know you mentioned on the album like you are interested in, you know, restarting that whole journey. And I don't imagine that fear's gonna be less this time around, you know?
Like, right. Right.
If anything, knowing myself, I'm like, oh God, that'd be so much worse, so much harder. Like,
yeah. And Karen is pregnant now. She's 8.5 months pregnant, and so
congrats
you know,
for her and for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate that very much. And yeah, I mean, the anxiety is like definitely still present, still there. But I think of it as the kind of insight that's similar to like mindfulness. You know, like when you start learning about mindfulness and you're like, yeah, this is like all so true, like great point. Mm-hmm. And it's not until one, or at least for me, I recognize that that's a daily, minutely, hourly practice. It's not like a fact that you memorize and then you know it, right? And I think that, you know, the insight about love and loss. Yeah, I think it did take that for me, because I mean, my worry about death has been ever present for me since I am as young as having a memory. Yeah. I have never, ever not worried about it.
Those are my earliest memories.
Yeah, right.
Which is great. We sound like very mentally healthy.
I think that's very normal, though. I feel like it's
for your
like,
earliest memory to be worrying that the people you love are gonna die.
All right, maybe not your earliest. Maybe not your earliest.
So, but my earliest
at
memories,
some point,
Ellie.
you get that in your brain.
Yeah, and yes. And so you know, I think it is. It was an insight that I felt was like worthy of building an hour around. Yeah. And like, it was a helpful, you know, North Star for the hour, because everything that went into it was like in service of that insight. Right. Yeah. And if you're listening and you're like, but why do I have to listen to the album? I still think to it.
Because we told you to, listeners. That's why.
Well, and also, I think it's like the how you get there, not the fact that you arrived somewhere. But
yeah, we're not spoiling the album by mentioning one nice takeaway from it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think that like kind of unpacking the way, like different kinds of grief, that was like an important thing for me, because like one of the things I think, I don't know, psychologically that is really confusing about stillbirth, at least for us, it was the grief of it is like when we lost my dad, or even when we lost my cat, our cat Mona, like we knew why we were sad, because you go to memories, you go, oh, you know, he would have done this or she would have done that or whatever. And with Leo, we never knew her. So it's like, we didn't know what to miss. But then it's like, isn't that this lot, like you're grieving hope, you know, you're grieving, right?
And all the possibility, you're grieving all the possibilities that are not.
Right. Yeah. And it's like kind of, it's just it's an interesting psychological state. And I don't mean that to minimize it. I think that's just the nature of how I might process a thing, is to, yes, be sad, but also to almost simultaneously look at my own experience and be like, but this is weird and interesting and different because, and then list all the reasons and desire sharing them with people. And so, you know, I imagine that some people may not want to hear about a fear of death and stillbirth and other kinds of grief and all of it. I mean, I, for the longest time, because of my fear of death, I used to have to, anytime someone mentioned, like in school or whatever, if someone said anything about dying, I would have to go wash my hands, like a total OCD, you know, thing. Yeah. And I would like have to go to the bathroom. And then after a while, I was like, oh, I can't go to the bathroom all the time. So I'll just blow on my hands. And I would have to blow on my hands in multiples of 18, which is significant for Judaism. And so, because 18 means life and whatever. I played 18 holes of golf. Well, I didn't. I played 7. But the plan was to play 18 holes of golf with my neighbor, who's also a lesbian. We have lesbians across the street. It's like the best thing ever.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing. Right? And like, she's awesome. She's like, hey, you want to play golf? I was like, absolutely. Like, this is all of the lesbian acceptance I've ever wanted in my entire life. Like, a best friend. You know, she tells me, she's like a weather watcher. And so she's got me with the radar on my phone. She's like, I think a storm's coming. You want to come over on the rocking chairs? And I'm like, yeah, Vicky.
Yes.
And so she's the best. But anyway, so she was like, oh, you want to play golf? I was like, yeah, sure. And I'm not a golfer, really. But like, okay, whatever. You want to talk and walk around. And then it's like, it's like this whole thing with like, when do you know when to drive versus what, whatever. Anyway, but 18 holes is too many. Okay.
It's so long. It's a whole day.
Yeah. And I'm just like, the only time I've ever done anything 18 times is because of Jewish superstition. Meanwhile, there's like a whole sport around it. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, cause the only time I ever counted to 18 is because I'm like, something bad's going to happen if I don't. Like, I used to do the Nordic track. I'm 43, but even 43-year-olds are like, that thing you hang up clothes in my mother's basement?
Yeah.
Yes. And so I would do the Nordic track, but because I did the skier, okay, my the palms of my hands would graze the outer edge of the hip pillow that's part of the contraption that is this exercise machine. And every time the palm of my hand would graze, I would have to be like, okay, I have to graze it 17 more times. And like, it was just OCD, right? Until 18 because of Judaism.
Meanwhile,
but you couldn't do the whole golf day.
No, I couldn't. Well, at one point I was like, Vicky, can we have lunch? And she's like, we can have lunch right now. And I was like, perfect. Because, you know, I mean, and honestly, we did Seven. Is that, you know, now I'm going to get in my head about that. I did not see the movie Seven. I am way too scared of scary movies. Ghostbusters 2 sent me into, I couldn't sleep for a year after Ghostbusters.
Oh my God.
You got to just go back and golf 11 holes. I also really don't like scary. Just once a year, golf one hole. You got time.
Right.
Also, like, you have to go with someone who, like my girlfriend's very into golf. Oh. Like, she was on the golf team in high school.
Okay.
And so, like, we went golfing with her dad. And it's like, you bring snacks.
Right.
You bring a cooler. Oh, like, you are, like,
that's
you know,
why
you have
the whole
to know,
cart
like,
to haul all your shit around.
This is the place you live for, like, 8 hours.
Right. It's such a wild
And if you're not prepared for that, then you're like, yeah, I'm starving.
Right. I was starving. I really was. It was like, but I love my friend Vicky. And so that's fun. But, like, anyway, so all of it to say, I wouldn't have been able to listen to my own album without, like, I'd have to listen in the shower. Okay. And then I'd have to take 17 more showers right after, right?
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Do you like science fiction? I'm Carrie Bechet, and if you loved movies like Arrival or Interstellar, then you're going to want to check out my podcast, Hypothetical. On Hypothetical, we tell speculative sci-fi stories interwoven with real science. New episodes every Tuesday, available wherever you get podcasts.
So I get it. Yeah. And also, you know, I was like, I think that this is a meaningful thing to do and that I bring something unique, you know, because what was I listening to? Like, I listen to like a lot of self-help, that kind of stuff. It's like all I'm just searching for a Bible. That's what I think, because honestly, and I don't mean to sound like a heretic, but I think the Bible is a terrible book. Okay. Like I just, and I don't mean it. Like I don't
like not written well, like
are you
they needed a better editor or
100%. I'm like,
where's the pictures? Like, what are we,
you know what,
what
it
are
is
you talking about?
I think it's like, okay. So the Bible, I'm guessing, is intended to guide better behavior, right?
I think that was the original plan.
Yeah. I'm guessing that's, whoever the authors were, they wanted a society that was living right, okay? I do not read any book without wanting that outcome. Like, I am my best self on week five of like an 8-week Audible course that is supposed to change my life forever. Okay. I am the audience for a book like that.
For the Bible.
Right, for the Bible. If the Bible was a better book. But the Bible, unfortunately, I'm like, I need a vulnerable story about the author to start, you know, oh, I used to be an addict and then I got, you know, whatever. So give me something that's like, now I'm with you, right? Yeah. And here's what I do. And first of all, it's like all these things that's telling me not to, like, I don't want my neighbor's wife. Like, none of it's relevant to me. And this is the stuff that I'm supposed to be focused on.
I think you should just covet more and then it'll be very applicable. Right?
Then you'll understand.
Yeah, then you'll get it. It just doesn't apply to you. That's all.
Maybe
you don't
steal
goats
enough. Too good of a person already.
Gotta go out and just, you know, start taking your neighbor's goats home and then figure out what to do with them.
I was listening to a podcast and I think the guy's name is Kevin Kelly. And he was saying, don't aim to be the best, aim to be the only. That's like a thing, which I was like, okay, yeah, right, exactly. That's like the reaction to all self-help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Yep. And so, but that's how I thought of it. And I wasn't thinking specifically of that, first of all, because anachronistically, it does not make sense because I heard this like last week and I recorded the album a while ago. But I feel like in some way there was an element of that going into recording because I was like, I am the only person I know right now who has experienced this from my perspective, right? And I'm a comedian. Like, if this existed already, because somebody else had made the album, I might not have recorded it. Because then it's like, okay, well, I mean, maybe I would have, but I'm just saying, like, I was like, I don't know anybody who's talking about this. And I've been through so much grief in the past, like, year and a half. And the extent to which I was scared to know when I could laugh again and all that was so real, especially because the whole time I was a comedian. Not only did I have to think about laughing, I had to think about, like, when am I going to be able to go on stage and make other people laugh? And I had a literal dead baby as the topic. So it's like, what? You know, so I do feel I'm not like a everything happens for a reason gal necessarily, because I'm like, I have no idea, right? None of us knows. However, to the extent that I got into this business, right? Because I was trying to like, really find my true mode of expression. And then I am met with these circumstances. Again, I would hate if that is the reason, because I'm just like, what? Like, you had to sacrifice a baby? Like, why? That said, it is what it is. Like, it happened. It's super terrible, but it happened. It was something that forced me to really contend with, like, what am I doing comedy for? Why? Right?
Yeah. Well, and that's, I feel like it's, I think the reason's backwards, right? Like, do I think it's like, oh yeah, this is why that had to have happened to your daughter.
Sure.
No, it's like, but that did happen to your daughter. And that's the one way or another, that's the reason you're here now, right? Like that's why you're, that's how you got here, you know? And it's like, I think you can't try to make it go the other way, because that's
totally
that just feels like it's gonna open up too much.
I just am always like sensitive with that, because, you know, especially in grief, I mean, people say the darndest things. And, you know, there's so much, I mean, we're all just like walking through life, like, how do we know what happens, right? And the fear of death is all consuming. And there's, you know, great, like, really good works that contend with that problem, right? The denial of death and man's search for meaning, and, you know, lots of like kind of really, I don't know, important, better than the Bible works, right?
But you know,
that would be so great.
You know what? Something that I love though is like, because one of the things Ellie and I were talking about real quick too when we were like talking
brainstorming the episode,
a little bit, is like something that I always think this is going to be such a long explanation as I try to make sense of all of the things in my head right now anyways. So sure. Bear with me. One of the things that
the timer, the hourglass timer.
You have an hourglass timer. We need like a little, like a Scrabble timer.
I could use one of those too. Yeah.
Okay. So someone time me and you can just like buzz at me when my time's up. Is one of the things that like we talk a lot about, because obviously like we, you know, started this podcast and all this stuff, and at its core, like the thing about the podcast that we wanted to touch on is like that there are certain things that queer people have as just like shared experiences. And we are people who love, like, we love queer community. We love like going to queer spaces and like, you know, all that kind of stuff. And what I think is interesting about that is that like we do understand that like we are not all the same. Like all queer people are not all the same person.
And yet.
And yet. Right. But and it's like, and the and
you
yet
talked about
sometimes.
Your cat earlier and I have a cat tree behind me.
Right.
There are some similarities.
But this, is, this is what I'm saying. But it's like, and yet, the thing that sometimes to me, I'm like, when you keep digging your way back down, like at the bottom of it, the reason that I think queer people always are like, yes, but you know what we all have in common is like the experience of the trauma of living in a society where you are not the norm, right? Like we all experience otherness.
In varying levels, depending on where we're at.
But I feel like sometimes that's the thing that we all know about each other is you're like, you meet another queer person, you're just like, oh, you too, man? We know whatever it is, we're gonna find something that we have in common because we know we already have something in common, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so I feel like there's something about that experience that I also think tends to predispose queer people to opening up about and sharing our trauma in a different way, maybe, right? Where it's like we are, I think, a little more practiced in the way that like that tends to be sort of the underlying basis of a lot of queer connections, right?
Well, and then, like, and how then you do the how you tell your coming out story on a first
date. And then like you tell your and then you're like, oh my god, how were your parents about it? Like, right? It's like that's those are like our first, like, oh, you're meeting someone for the first time. Let's like hit the basics of all of your trauma, right?
Yeah.
Like, and there is something that I think is, to me, like whether it's intended or not, listening to the special, there is something that like feels queer about that, right? That just like feels like resonates as a queer person to be like, oh yeah, of course, like this happened to you. So like, yeah, come do a comedy album about this thing that happened. That happens to other people as well, you know?
Well, and, also,
and that like some, like you were saying, like maybe some people aren't going to want to listen to the album and that's fine. But I also think there's a lot of people who will, because they will be able to relate, and it will be like, I comforting is maybe not the right word, but like it will hit something in them to be able to have there be humor around that, you know, like that is a
well also thing. Even just to know that someone else has gone through the same thing and is talking about it rather than like a lot of things with grief, which like you sort of touched on before, is like we don't talk, like, well, I'm like, maybe this is me, like, my own thing, but it's like I feel like there's certain cultures where it's just like we don't talk about it. It's too difficult. It's it hurts too much. So instead of like talking through it, you just don't. You sweep it under the rug. Like it's a thing that you talk about like every once in a while, and like you try to avoid it.
That's how Kelsey's family deals with things.
Yeah.
Just don't talk about it. If you never talk about them, it's better that way. Good.
And I don't feel like my family is quite like that, but it's like I feel like, I mean, even like when I think about like my grandmother passed away when I was really young. And like my, like every time she's brought up, I start to cry. And so then people are like, don't bring it up, which is also like, yes, but also I found that as I get older, the more we talk about her, the less I cry, which is probably good. But all, you know what I mean? Where it's like,
Ellie's
okay,
gonna start sobbing.
I'm going to start crying already. But like, but there's like different varying levels of like, people just feel uncomfortable. So we're either just, we're just going to avoid it. Rather than like, talking it through. And you're talking it through on a very public forum.
Right. And I think those are both really good insights. Like, I think, you know, to your point, Lee, that the idea of, hey, there's a community of people that might feel othered because they might have had this experience and didn't hear anybody talking about it, let alone with any lightness, or not lightness, like necessarily about the topic, but like that they're okay, right? Like this is a living, breathing example of like, you can laugh again, you can gather in a group again, you can, you know, talk about
make
this.
Fun of your mom yeah. in front of strangers again. Like it's impossible.
Right, right. 100%. And so I did, I think, yeah, like, I think that's true that I was thinking about, you know, people who might want that example of like, I'm gonna be okay. I'm not okay right now, but I'm gonna be okay. Because I think as a queer person, that was like always what I was wanting to see. Like, am I going to mm-hmm. be okay? You know, like in one way or another. I mean, I grew up when there were a lot of commercials about AIDS and getting HIV and AIDS, like commercials on television. So like you'd just be watching and like that was like a commercial. And so they said at that time, if you're gay, you can get AIDS. And I was like, I think I'm gay. Do I have AIDS? And it wasn't like
they weren't clear on the details in the commercial.
Right. Well, because they didn't want to be clear yeah. because like being clear yeah. is like going to ruin the, you know, the acceptability of the commercial.
Right.
Meanwhile, you know, I'm sitting there. What was I, 11 or 12, being like, oh, my God, I should tell my parents, like I should plan for, you know, my death and all of this stuff, and I was really having thoughts like that. And it wasn't until I had a friend whose mom was our science teacher, and I went to Jewish day school. So like we didn't talk about sex, let alone gay sex. And because she was my friend's mom and because she was our science teacher, but the combination of those two, I went up to her after class and I was like, hi, can you explain to me why, if it's true, gay people get AIDS? Cause I just like, I don't know. And I think she...
Oh, bless that woman.
Right. And she broke it down in a science way. And she's yeah. like, well, it's not about homosexuality. It's about like, you know, tearing and the likelihood of tearing and blood and like whatever. And she was able to do so in a very straightforward way that allowed me to like understand that this was a science-based thing, not some like punishment from God, you know, and, you know, I don't mean in any way to minimize like people who did contract HIV and AIDS, but also I don't think her explanation was like offensive to them either. She's literally mm-hmm. saying there's right. this and they didn't know about it and now they do. And like people are taking precautions or whatever. Cause this was before, you know, PrEP. I mean, this yeah. was like way before.
Yeah.
So it was like really a death sentence in that time, which is so sad. But yeah, like I really appreciate when someone is able to just like tell me what the facts are, right? Yeah. Or tell me, I mean, in that sense, it's facts. In my, you know, album, it's not facts other than this happened to me. And I do want to talk about it. And then, you know, to your point, Ellie, about just talking being kind of like a good in and of itself. I think like for me, I think about this a lot in terms of my grandparents being Holocaust survivors who hid because, you know, the way that and this isn't like on the album, I do talk about that, but this isn't stuff from the album. So this is like bonus stuff for people who are listening. But like my grandparents and my parents were very tight-lipped about everything. Like I'm friends with my neighbor. My parents treated our neighbors like they were the enemy. Like, just like, you don't say a word to nobody, you know, like, mm-hmm. because you never know who's a Nazi basically yeah. is, I think, the implication.
Which to be fair, they're starting to be right again these days, you know, which is yes. depressing.
Yeah. Right. And that is definitely depressing. And also like, yeah. So that's how I grew up, is like, fear everybody, don't tell anybody anything. And I get that was a product of like my grandparents influencing my parents, because my grandparents had to lie and be silent to save their literal lives. Meanwhile, yeah. you know, my parents instructed me that way. It was like my mother's father told her, all I want, just don't be on the cover of the newspaper. That was like something that he said to her. And I remember my mother saying that to me once, and I was like, wait, but I want to be on the cover of the newspaper. And I remember her being like, yeah, I guess I kind of get it. Because, like, you know, what's my thought is like, what's the point of my grandparents being so silent for me to also be, right? Because, yeah. Like, didn't they hide and not say anything and pretend to be non-Jews and whatever it was in order for me to be loud? Because if I'm not, you know, then, like, why? I mean, if I didn't want to be, then that's another thing. But, like, if I have something that I'm like, I want to say this, I want to tell everybody this, and then I'm not because I'm scared. I mean, and to your point, Lee, like, yeah, it is depressing how similar, you know, things may be. And also, I mean, I don't know. Like, I do take it like, I mean, 4 out of 4 of my grandparents survived, right? And so in a sense, that gives me pretty good odds. So if I'm going to be loud about being Jewish, to take that example, or gay, right? Maybe I can survive.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I hope we don't get to that. But, like, I want to lean in, I guess, to the kind of like, yeah, I'm going to say it, you know, because if that's a reason that, like, something goes bad for me.
Yeah. No, but I, you know what I like too is like, I think Ellie and I are both very those kinds of people as well, you know, of just the like, I would rather live out loud.
Yeah.
Loudly. Right. And I
clearly,
think, but,
yeah.
But,
like, be super sense, gay on a podcast.
But in the sense that it like ties everything all back together, I think is like, you know, something I was thinking about is like when you were talking about that sense of showing like and it's okay, like I, you know, this happened and also like you can be okay afterwards, and like you can still make comedy, you can laugh, you can you know, like is like I was thinking too, like it's something that I always used to think about when I was teaching, like in grad school, like I was always explicitly making it clear to my students that like I'm very gay, like this is there should be, I mean, A, I look like this, but like also you know, like let's not shy away from that, like even because I was engaged and got married while I was in grad school to my wife, and so it's like, you know, when I when I was using the term fiance, and fiance is ambiguous, and I would like try to use the female pronouns as often as possible, which like still, I mean, my students were like 18-year-old college freshmen, like many of them somehow still didn't pick up on all of this stuff, but the ones who needed to did, and like that was why, you know, because I think it is important to for those kids to see, because especially, you know, like I was teaching a big class at like Boston University, like there were hundreds of kids in this class, and some of them were coming from, you know, states and places and families
from
where
not Boston.
They had not maybe ever had the opportunity of seeing someone saying like, yeah, hey, here I am, this is my life, I'm getting married soon, or like, you know, or this is my wife, and this is like, yeah, we have an apartment and a dog, and I'm very happy, and like, and it was important for me to know that like kids who needed to see that would get to see that, and I feel like you're, what you're describing is like a similar thing, you know, it's like a similar need to like, yeah, there's the part of like doing it for yourself, absolutely, but I think it's like, it's both of those, right? Like, you're describing both sides of that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, I think you're right. And I think that's great that you did that. Is that where you know each other through?
It's actually not.
Okay.
It's we then met years later. We spent a lot of time in Boston. We never met
in
Boston.
I was there for 6 years and we never knew each other while we were both, both in the same place. And then I moved out here, and the first year I moved out to California, we met at an a cappella festival in Oakland. So,
Wow.
Yeah. Small
so
world.
So you both
you know?
Are singers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mostly.
No, we are both singers, Lee.
Yeah, and one of us sings in like three different bands right now, and but one of us does not. So, you know, I'll leave that up to you to decide.
That's amazing. Oh, I want to see both of you outside of the context of this Zoom, and also
we've got
things we can send you. We've got
stuff.
Oh,
that's so great. Okay,
yeah,
great.
We last Was it 2 years ago, Lee? Like, I do not know what
it came out in 2021. Yes.
2 years ago, we wrote a musical also. So,
oh, you can listen
to our musical.
I would love to.
It's very, gay. Very gay.
Yeah.
Set in a lesbian bar. So, you know,
that's amazing.
That's all you need to know. It's like cheer. It's like my elevator pitch is it's Cheers if all the patrons started singing.
And we're lesbians.
That's great.
And right. We're lesbians.
Yes.
Right, right. Yes. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
But yes, okay. Before we wrap up, because we're pretty close coming in, we're coming in towards our Q&A.
Totally.
Is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about your special or anything you feel like we haven't covered enough or you want to clarify?
No, I hope that people get something out of it. I'm really proud of it and I'm really very, like, I really love it, which is a lovely thing to be able to say about my own work. And it is a lot of, like, what I wanted to do as a stand-up comedian. So, you know, I'm super into it, and I hope people are too. And also, like, you know, if people, you could go to my website and email me. I answer. So please feel free to do that. It's dearlizglazer.com.
Awesome. All right. Are we ready for our Q and gay?
Q. Q. And. Gay.
Question number one. What does success look like to you? A, happiness. B, fame. C, security. Or D, dedication? Tough one. I love how I'm like, these are super fast multiple choice, but like, this is like the most like intense.
And then we're like existential.
Multiple choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think A, happiness.
It's a good answer.
Love it.
Thank you.
Question two. Have you ever changed careers? A, yes. B, no. Or C, I need to.
I mean, yes, A. What if I said no? And I'm like, no.
It was all a lie. Elaborate ruse of a backstory.
I very much have. And I'm always interested in knowing stories of other people who have as well.
Yes. Yeah. Also, yeah, if you are in our audience and you have had a big career change or even a small career change, let us know.
Hit us up.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Question number three. How do you process grief? A, food. B, humor. C, music. Or D, avoidance?
I mean, food and humor. Avoidance, I can't imagine. I feel like if I don't say avoidance, then I probably do avoid it. And so I'm like, I gotta just throw that in for a good measure. What just was C?
Music.
Music.
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, yeah. I mean, Ben Platt has that song on his debut album, which I really loved, his debut album, called In Case You Don't Live Forever. And it's such a beautiful song. I could start crying thinking about it. And when my dad died, I listened to it like over and over and over again. So also music.
Well, that's good, because I was trying to come up with like a range of options and it's like I hit them all. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
You hit them
all. Totally did. Yeah.
Okay. Question four. What kind of golf do you prefer? A, golf. B, mini golf. Or C, frisbee?
I guess A, because it was fun. That's the thing, is like, I enjoy and I like the kind of like setup of it. I wish.
Just like half a course. You just want to do the first.
Yeah.
Like people do the front nine or the back nine. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I do like it and I want to like it more.
It's a good
goal. It's time. This is your year to.
You just gotta bring a cooler next time. That's all.
Yeah, yeah. Bring some sandwiches just in case.
Yeah, about to have a kid. Yeah, I think I'm gonna play golf.
Yeah.
Totally the right time.
Notoriously, a time where you have just nothing but free time.
Exactly.
It would be a very heteronormative thing for you to do.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Totally.
Bye, honey. Going to play golf. Horrible. Yeah. All right. Question number five, our final question. Are you friends with your neighbors? A, yes, or B, no?
Well, I'm friends with most of my neighbors, but then there's Steve. And Steve, it's like
we've opened a can of worms. I love it.
Well, it's like, okay, so the first year that we were on the block, they have a block party every summer. Mm-hmm. And they block off both ends of the street, but I didn't know where to go in for my house because I was new. And so I ended up like driving, and Steve owns a bouncy house, not rents, owns. And so he blows up the bouncy house for the party. And like, he was like, what are you doing? You know, like, you're going the wrong way. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, whatever. And then the following year, I was going out to the supermarket to get food for the block party. I didn't realize that Steve was already blowing up the house. Okay. And then I come in because it wasn't fully closed yet. And he's like, you did the same thing last year. And I'm like, now we have like a years long feud. And it was just like two mistakes and the same mistake. And he's so mad about it. But
does,
yeah,
Steve,
so,
have kids, so Steve, or just a bounce house?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too.
I don't actually know.
Lil sus, Steve.
Yeah, I don't know much about him. And I mean, the bouncy house is a real asset to the party.
Oh, for,
like,
sure.
I mean, you know, and the party is like, it's
but
a blast.
It's not worth owning a bounce house for a once a year party. Also,
maybe he takes it out other places. I don't know.
maybe he has a whole bouncy house rental business.
Oh, like, yeah, there you go. It's just like, it's so large, and I'm like, he owns it. Like, it's, he has a second home.
Yeah,
it's a bouncy home, but it's a home.
He's a real estate mogul.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
That's on his business cards, I bet. Sure.
Yes.
And I also welcome being friends with Steve. It's just, I think he thinks that I'm like, you know, doing this wrong on purpose or something. But yeah.
Steve,
I'm not driving anywhere.
Steve, if you're listening to this lesbian podcast, this is the olive branch that has been extended to you.
Yep, totally.
Can you imagine? He's like, I heard you on that podcast last year. And you still did the same thing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, Liz, thank you so much for hanging out
with us.
It was really lovely getting to talk to you about your special. Before we sign off, will you just let our listeners know where they can find you on social media? Repeat your website again, just in case they didn't catch it.
Yeah.
And let them know how they can pre-order your special.
Totally. So my website is DearLizGlazer.com, D-E-A-R, LizGlazer.com. And my socials are mostly at Liz Glazer, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, LinkedIn. I actually do quite a bit on LinkedIn because I do like a lot of like lawyers and law firms, law students, whatever. So all that's Liz Glazer. On Twitter, my Twitter has been hacked. And I'm trying to get it back. But if you notice, my Twitter is at Elizabeth Glazer. But now it's like, apparently my Twitter has been tweeting about cryptocurrency like once an hour, if you know me, you know, I would only tweet about cryptocurrency like once a day max. But no, I'm kidding. I do nothing of cryptocurrency. But like, anyway, and I tried to get it back and I'm in the process, but don't, you know, Twitter is a no-go for me, at least now. But all the other ones, I'm at Liz Glazer.
Awesome.
Got it. Yeah. And how can people pre-order the album?
Yeah, pre-order.
Yeah. So, okay. So you go on iTunes. First of all, I, in my Instagram stories, like until the album comes out, and maybe also after, but after, you can get it on Spotify too. But again, it's about the ranking upon release. So the way to pre-order it is you can go to my Instagram at Liz Glazer. I'll definitely put up a story soon if it's not already there with a link to do so. And basically you go to the iTunes page where you'll see a very particular experience. You'll see the album cover, which is me and a gravestone. It's my father's gravestone, incidentally. And if you scroll down, you should be able to press pre-order this album. If you are already an iTunes subscriber, then I'm told that you can add the album to your library, and that will also do the same thing. Like, you save it, basically, and that affects the same outcome.
Great.
Amazing.
Well, here's hoping you hit that.
Oh, yeah. Top. We'll see. You know. Not that that's
the point. Yeah, yeah.
Right. We've gone full circle. Also, here we go.
Yeah, we're full circle. Yeah. Full circle. Yes.
Totally. You all are the best. Truly. This was really a delight. I'm so glad that we met. I really,
yes.
I really
yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Me too.
Let me hear you say hip, 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 well, yeah.
We love hearing from all of you. We love continuing to build this community, and we just like to shout out some of our favorite things every episode. This week, we want to shout out two things on TikTok recently. One of them is from Ripley, who was commenting on the episode we did with Elle Mills, Ellie, where you told that story about someone, the interaction you had in the bathroom, misconnection.
Oh my God, it's the person?
No, it's not the person.
Oh my God, wait, no. Oh, sorry, I was like, they found me again?
No, their comment was exactly that, that they were like, you told that story about them finding you and like messaging you. And their comment was like, wow, someone randomly finding your socials and then just like a bunch of red flags.
Yes.
Which 100% correct, Ripley. Yes. Red flags. Yes. Red flags all around.
Red
run,
flags.
Girl, run.
Red flags all over the place. I agree. Thank you for your support on that one.
I like how Ellie literally just had a heart attack.
I was like, I've been I mean, also, why did I even like, of course, like, it's not like she never lost me, you know what I mean? Like, it's not, I don't think I blocked her or anything. I just was like, eh, we're not, you know. Also, we want to shout out Adair, who tagged us in a TikTok about Cheetah Girls 2 being super gay, and then we need to add it to our shipping gay list. And I feel like that is a Disney franchise that we haven't touched yet. And
it's one of them. It's for sure.
It is
Cheetah Girls 1 on our
quite
list.
Quite gay.
Yeah.
I don't know the difference between the gayness level of Cheetah Girls 1 and Cheetah Girls 2.
I haven't watched
it. Is it like the difference
in
like Grease
25 years?
Grease
so.
1 versus Grease 2.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
we'll
that kind of, we'll see how much gayer it is, but thank
we'll
you for the
sure
suggestion.
We'll make sure we have both of them explicitly on our list.
Yes.
That's all.
Yes. As always, I want to thank our Lesbian Jesus patrons, Mark Foster,
Tanya Ferguson,
Alana Rosen,
Lizette Stye,
Adi Benitez,
Fiona W.,
and Sophia Phillips.
And our King Princess patrons, Amy and Ellen,
Leah Henley,
Andrea Doucette,
and Julia Gonzalez. Thank you all so much for your support. We cannot keep making the show without you.
Remember, you can also find us on all the social medias. We are on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at Les Hangout Pod.
You can email us at leshangoutpod@gmail.com.
You can check out our website at leshangoutpod.com.
Whatever app you use for podcasts, make sure you subscribe so you'll be the first to know when new episodes drop.
We're also posting videos up on our YouTube channel, so make sure you subscribe at youtube.com/leshangoutpod to catch those.
Les Hangout is an independently produced show hosted by us with audio production by me. Our production assistant is Kristen Murison, and Twitter shenanigans by Lee Holmes Foster.
If you want to help support our little team, the first thing you can do is leave us a rating and a review on whatever app you use to listen to podcasts. It helps new people find the show.
If you want to support us financially, which is a huge help for us, like we said, we are an independent team. We do not get funding from anyone else, pretty much from all of you. So we appreciate all of you. You can join us on our Patreon at bit.ly/lespatreon, and you'll get access to all of our Patreon bonus episodes, which we've been really trying to release for all of you consistently this year. Our last one was on Loving Annabelle. Our next one will be on Ammonite. You can join at bit.ly/lespatreon.
If you want to buy some Les Hangout merch, we have all of our designs up in our TeePublic. Now is a great time to start ordering all of your Pride gear. Pride Month is coming up real fast. You can find all that at bit.ly/lesshop.
And remember, we have a queer production company making queer podcast musicals with guaranteed happy endings. You can find everywhere at @dollarbeanprod.
You can also check out our website, dollarbeanproductions.com.
You can listen to all the episodes of our first show, The Flame, on any podcasting app.
And if you want to help support us in making more musicals like our next show, Journey to the Heart, which we are actively recording as we speak, well, not as we speak, currently actively recording these days when we are not actively recording this podcast, you can join our Patreon at bit.ly/dollarbeanpatreon.
If you want to find us individually, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at Ellie Bridgeta.
And you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at LSH Foster.
With that, I'm Ellie.
And I'm Lee.
And let's hang out again soon.
Let's hang out.